I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. If you're struggling to start a small business, finding a loan can be an uphill battle, unless you're in Kansas City. Today, the microloan program in KC that's just surpassed the $3 million mark. It specializes in businesses looking to get started or expand. We'll hear from one entrepreneur who's benefited and talk with the lender behind these microloans. Then it's man versus beast, and that's no bull, except it is. Meet two Missouri natives climbing the ranks of professional bull riding. We'll learn about the most exciting 8 seconds in sports as they break down the science it takes to conquer a bucking behemoth. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Kansas City's microloan program was set up to give business startup money to folks who traditionally have had a tough time getting that money. We're talking minority-owned and women-owned businesses. Well, newsflash, the program is now 3 years old, and it just surpassed the $3 million mark. One of its founders, Councilman Scott Taylor, says the program has become a national model for other cities. Today, an update on why the program is growing and who it's helped. With us are Jim Boyle. He's a small business counselor and one of the founding members of Justine Peterson. That's a St. Louis-based company that aims to help low-income individuals increase their financial assets. He oversees the Kansas City microloan program. He joins us this morning from KWMU over in St. Louis. Jim, thanks for taking some time.
Thanks, Steve.
Also here is Gabrielle Bennett, who's received a microloan for her small business, which is Bumps with Benefits, just 3 weeks old. That's a wellness center that serves pregnant women and new moms. And Gabrielle, nice to have you here.
Thank you so much, Steve.
And a big supporter of the microloan program, I've already mentioned him, City Councilman Scott Taylor, who represents the 6th District out south. Councilman, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
Jim Boyle, what's a microloan?
I want to put the emphasis in micro, Steve.
Okay.
It's a small dollar loan, anywhere from ideally $500 to no more than $10,000. We can lend more than 10, but we try to spread the wealth around in Kansas City. But the essence of a microloan is, again, the dollar amount. And it's amazing what a $3,000 loan might do for someone. Starting their lawn care business, their hairstyling business, what have you. So the emphasis on the dollar amount.
Explain that to me, Jim. Why can $3,000 make that much of a difference? Because when I think of business, I tend to think of amounts in the millions.
Thank you. Well, as Councilman Taylor could speak to, the demand for a $3,000 loan is limitless. The $3,000 can buy some lawnmowers. They can actually start up a hairstyling business, a hot dog stand. It's amazing how, because again, our average is about $8,000, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
But the $3,000, and we do a lot of $3,000 loans. Can really float a business in an amazing way.
Gabby, I'm told that this program has made a huge difference for you and your business. Again, I love the name of your business, Bumps with Benefits. Tell us how much money you got and how big of a difference it made to you.
Sure. We were able to get about $6,000, and it may not seem like a lot, but we really needed it. It really helped with startup equipment, beginning marketing, just being able to even open to let the community know that we exist. We wouldn't have been able to do it without Justine Peterson.
And this was money, I gather, that you didn't have handy.
No, yeah. We didn't. I tried my absolute hardest to go from my own fund until I couldn't anymore, and then I turned to Justine Peterson, and they were amazing.
This is amazing to me, Councilman Taylor, this notion that $3,000 can make that much of a difference. What are you seeing around town, the kinds of businesses that you're helping here, and what do they do with $3,000? They must go through that awfully quickly.
Steve, it's really interesting to see the variety of businesses. So I think Jim mentioned some good examples, but we have restaurants that have opened. We have other larger businesses. And I think it's not only the smaller loans for the smallest of businesses. We've heard stories where somebody's put their life savings in, worked with their family to put together the money. They were just a little bit short to open the doors. Mm-hmm. And so this is also kind of a gap financing for that small amount. So a few thousand dollars might make the difference between opening a business and not opening it.
You know, Jim Boyle was saying that the demand for $3,000 loans is pretty remarkable. What do you see?
Well, we see one of the great things about this program and why we wanted to set it up is we were hearing a few years ago coming out of the recession that people were laid off. It was difficult to start up a business to get a loan for a variety of reasons, whether it was a veteran returning from service that didn't have a financial track record. Businesses in certain zip codes felt like they were having a more difficult time getting a traditional bank loan for whatever reasons.
That's been a huge issue in this city for a long time, Councilman.
Yes, yes. And
East
I think
the truth, you can't get money. You hear it all the time.
Right. And this program was set up specifically to be more flexible, to help everybody out, because we really need everybody to succeed in the city, for the city to succeed. And so if I could just give you a couple statistics that I think are useful. While we've loaned out over $3 million now, none of this money is coming out of the general fund.
And I was going to say, where is the money coming from?
We were fortunate to have a few projects, development projects that had surpluses that were basically giving a refund or surplus back. We captured it, put it into the Small Business Microloan Fund, and then in many cases, the Small Business Administration matches the amount, the loan loss reserve, 10 times over. So $1,000 turns into $10,000 in loans, $10,000 turns into $100,000, and that's how we've gotten this fund going. Banks are obviously can participate and contribute if they want to help out, because a lot of banks, these smaller loans are difficult to administer. They're just more costly than the benefit a traditional bank might get.
And a lot of times banks don't want to take them, is what you're saying here. It's too small, too much
hassle. I don't want to speak for the banks, but that's what we were hearing across the city when we had hearings a few years ago, and a lot of small businesses and listened to small business owners. Statistics, though, the program's working better than we expected. 71% of the number of loans are going to minority-owned businesses. 59% are going to women-owned businesses. 57% are going east of Troost.
That's interesting.
And these were all areas we heard at hearings throughout the city, including one on Troost on a Monday night. I remember we had at Alpha Energy.
Yeah.
There was a need for it. And so we filled that need with this program.
Jim Boyle, you laughed a little bit when I asked about whether the banks wanted these loans. I gather that's what your company's all about.
It is. We have a really good relationship with the bank, Steve. They're one of our main referral sources. And it's common knowledge that a $5,000, $3,000 loan needs to be processed the same way as a $50,000 or more loan to a bank. So they see us as a resource for a way to utilize this micro dollars and make those loans that are not cost effective for banks. But it's all about partnering with banks, Steve.
How long has Justine Peterson been around, Jim? And you all are based in St. Louis, and how did you get over to Kansas City?
An invitation from Councilman Taylor. They heard about our success here, had a few-year gap there, I believe. Scott can probably mention talk a little more in detail.
Yeah.
But had a gap of no microlending happening in KC. And our response typically is, yes, let's partner up and get rocking and rolling in Kansas City. So,
the fact that Kansas City has one of these programs, Scott, this is hardly unique, right? St. Louis has got one. Kansas City, many other cities do too now.
Yeah, it's something that's catching on all over, because we've received a lot of calls asking about how we set it up. But I think ours is a little unique in that the city pushed to bring it in. We identified a great micro lender. Justine Peterson was the number two microlender in the country before Kansas City. They're now number one. I think we've helped them become number one.
The fact that Kansas City is a $3 million fund, is that appropriate for a city our size? Are we still underfunded? Is that a large fund? I don't have any sense of it.
I think it's a pretty large fund. I think we're up there with Chicago and some other large cities.
Is that right?
And I think they actually looked at the model we set up, I believe, because I know the mayor contacted our mayor several years ago on some of the small business initiatives that we were undertaking.
Gabby
and
Bennett,
if I may, Steve.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim. I'm sorry.
Sorry. And we're speaking for this dollar amount in the KC City Kansas City, it's proper. We are servicing the entire KC metro area, wherein we've loaned over $6 million total.
Ah.
But today's topic is on Kansas City and the $3 million that we put on the street.
Hey, how big is the fund, just for comparison's sake, Jim, to St. Louis?
It does about 20% of our lending dollars in Kansas City region.
I mean, if the Kansas City area is doing $6 million, how much is St. Louis doing?
A good 25, 30 million.
Okay. So there's room to grow here, you're suggesting.
It's always Definitely. About capital, Steve. Again, Scott spoke about the dollars that we lend. We essentially two funds. The SBA lends us money. We're on the hook for every dime, which we must repay. And we have a general community development financial institution, another lending arm of Justine Peterson. And that's where a good sizable amount of the loans that are being made in Kansas City, that CDFI is where the dollars are coming from. Again, this is all borrowed money that we repay.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about Kansas City's burgeoning microloan program with some very good guests here. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is the number. You can also tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Gabby, tell us a little bit about bumps with benefits, and can I come?
Sure. I don't know how much you'd enjoy it. Bumps with Benefits is a wellness center for pregnant women and new moms. So
you're on Troost, right?
We are. We're right off of 75th and Troost.
Yeah.
We offer pre- and postnatal fitness classes, massage therapy, support groups, childbirth and parenting workshops, fun just fellowship events for women to be able to come get together, make new friends, and experience this amazing thing called birth with someone else.
I'm not hearing a lot of room for men in what you're doing here. You're catering to half the population here,
this
Gabby.
This is true. This is true. Now, our massage therapy services are available for everyone.
Are they?
However, our therapists are specialized in prenatal care.
Yeah.
But you're more than welcome to come in for a massage anytime.
That sounds good. Where did you get the name Bumps with Benefits? Because I love it.
Well, I want women to be able to really enjoy the benefits of their new baby bump. When I was pregnant with my daughter, I started a mini group called Bumps with Benefits, and we, all the women that were due around me around the same time between May and June, we would meet up for a couple times a month and just be together. We were a support system, and I want women to have that. And the likelihood of a pregnant woman walking up to another pregnant woman in a grocery store and saying, "Hey, we're both pregnant, let's hang out," it's unlikely. So I want to cut out that awkwardness and bring everyone together.
So what made you think you could take that group, your fellowship group, and sort of extend it to your own small business?
Well, when I was starting the group, I got a lot of feedback from women saying, "I hope you're doing something like this when I'm pregnant." And honestly, I was thinking, no, I probably won't. I won't be pregnant. So maybe I can help you start your own. But then I started to realize that this is where my passion was, and I needed to figure out how to make it happen, because it's not fair. Women should be able to have this support system. And if no one else is going to create it, then I need to. They need to be able to have access to this.
So what would you have done if the $6,000 you got from Kansas City's microloan program hadn't been available to you?
I think about that often, and I'm not quite sure. I probably would do a lot of Ubering, and it would take a while. But I did reach out to, before I came to Justine Peterson, I checked with one of my local banks, and one of the biggest issues was that I don't have a business line of credit. I'm not even open, so I don't have an opportunity to even form that line of credit. That's where Justine Peterson came in, and Jim was amazing, absolutely amazing.
You know, Jim was the guy who helped you?
Absolutely.
And that's where the issue is, Councilman Taylor, right? This lack of capital that Gabby's talking about. New business owners simply don't have it, right?
That's right. Coming out of the recession, when we had our public hearings all over the city, that was the number one issue we heard at every meeting, is lack of access to capital for smaller loans, for small businesses.
Yeah. What was the process like for you to get this microloan, Gabby? How did Jim help you get through the process?
It was actually much easier than I expected it to be. I worked with a SCORE mentor, and he's the one that actually referred me to Jim and Justine Peterson. And so I worked for a couple months to get everything in order, my business plan and all of the other documents that I would have had to submit. So when I started the process, I had the majority of it done. It took about maybe 2.5-3 weeks, and that was honestly over the holiday. So
that's not a long time.
It's not, and it was a much better experience than I expected. I expected it to be hard and long, and Jim was amazing. He really was. He really helped me. It felt genuine.
What was the toughest part of the process for you?
Probably finishing my business plan.
Mm-hmm. That's hard, right?
It is. But SCORE helped with that a lot, my mentor. You have all these ideas and just figuring out how to lay them down and get it organized. And I just finished my MBA, so I have the background knowledge. But when you're in school and you're turning in projects for businesses that don't exist, it's not quite the same as when you're trying to create your own dream.
And you've got skin in your own thing.
And you do.
Yeah. Do you have employees at?
I have some independent contractors.
Do you? Yeah.
Yes. Some of my fitness instructors and the doulas that teach my workshops. Yes, I do.
Yeah. Councilman Taylor, what about this notion of folks who haven't been able to repay loans? What's been the default rate you've seen with Kansas City's microloan program?
It's been very low, and I'll let Jim address it, but repayment rates in the 90s.
Is that right?
90%. Yeah, and we've seen this across the board, I think, in other programs before we looked into this, because people that use it value the experience and want to make sure others get the, once you repay, it goes back into the fund, can be loaned out again.
Is there an interest rate attached to these things, Jim?
Yeah, Steve. Rates will start at the lowest rate we can offer is about a 7.75.
Okay.
I'd like to keep the amortization, the payment time frame, no more than 3 years, ideally, for that. The highest rate we offer for a female-owned business is 12%, but our highest rate right now is 14.
Jim, should I be surprised that the repayment rate is in the 90s?
Not at all. I like to say that we're still in the experimental stage, Steve, as far as this microlending world goes, and which is what I try to emphasize with every one of our borrowers. It's a co-op approach in many ways. How a borrower repays our loan really determines the success and perhaps mainstreaming this type of lending, which is our ultimate goal. Right now, we're kind of on the outskirts of the lending world. But with the success of our borrowers repaying us, it can be hopefully it'll go mainstream. So,
how often do borrowers repay you early, Jim?
Very rarely. Though, funny you should ask, I got one yesterday. I think it was a 2016 loan, Steve, for about $9K, and they paid it off in full. That's not that common. We're just looking for on-time payments, and we have about a 6% default rate.
God, that's just amazing to me.
It is amazing. Well, again, there's some scrutiny in the loans we make, but we do lean toward the risk side because that's our mission as a nonprofit.
How often do folks come to you, Jim, and you look over their paperwork and you say, nah, you just don't quite have what it takes to get a Kansas City microloan?
Not often. Because I could lend as low as $500, Steve, because it could be as something as major for us as a credit-building loan. It could be a relationship starting loan, if they don't qualify for what they're asking. Are you interested in starting a relationship with Justine Peterson through this amount of money, and seeing how they're paying, and then growing it with them, a relationship? But very rarely do we have to say no.
How important is your business to the 75th and Truce neighborhood, Gabby? What impact has your business had? Do you see that area beginning to grow and sort of there's some synergy out there among the different businesses?
Well, we've only been open for about 3 weeks, but I do believe that we'll have a big impact on the community. There's nothing like this around, and the majority of us have witnessed or know someone who's pregnant. You know what they go through and how the ups and downs can change. within a daily basis. And having a service for pregnant women that's not modified for them, it's just created for them. This mm-hmm. is an amazing time in your life. It may not always be so fun, but we're here to help you.
But having your business at near 75th and Troost, is that encouraging any sense? Are other businesses now interested in coming to that area because you're there?
I would hope so. Yeah. I would love for the area to just thrive some more. I know they're doing a lot of construction, so I believe there's some plans in the motion with the city as far as down on maybe 80th and Troost or mm-hmm. so. But so far in the last 3 weeks, I haven't seen a rush to get around us quite yet.
Okay. Let's go to some phone calls here. Bill from Leawood. Bill, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Awesome show, Steve. Very, very. I'm proud of you guys. Did a good, really good job here. I've been a business owner since 1994. Started 5 businesses, and the loans that we got were very, very critical to us getting going. My first business started with $8,000 I had in my pocket. I needed $400,000. Boatman's Bank got together with Small Business Administration, gave me a $100,000 loan. We took it to a $30 million company.
Wow.
Created very high-paying jobs all over the city. I mean, the company was located in Olathe, but we had offices in Hawaii and Tulsa and stuff. My question is on the microloans. We have, and I'm very interested. First of all, I'll ask the question and I'll get off so other people, I don't want to hog the thing here. I need to know, do you have a website? You don't have to give it to me now. I'll write it down here in a second. That's pulled in. And I need to know, are you geographically limited? Is it just KCMO or do you make loans? Because my company, current company, just a handful of employees over in Overland Park, but my employees live in Brookside area. A couple of them do.
Okay, Bill, I appreciate it.
Last question, Steve, is that last comment is I hope you do this more often because this is very critical to our city, and I really appreciate you doing this, okay?
Yeah, Bill, I appreciate that. And Jim Boyle, I think I heard you say that your company's going beyond Kansas City, Missouri proper.
We are, Steve. Yeah, we lend in the Kansas City metro area. We're into Kansas, you know, as far as Topeka, or we can go a little further west, and we cover all of Missouri and, again, all of eastern Kansas.
And what's your website if people want to get in touch?
www.Justine, J-U-S-T-I-N-E, Peterson, all E's in Peterson, Peterson.org.
You know, Councilman Taylor, people might be listening to this and dismissing this notion of these small loans, but you hear politicians say all the time that the small business sector of our economy is critical to getting us going again.
Oh, it's definitely where the growth in the economy is and will be for the next several decades. I mean, mm-hmm. we have a lot of great large businesses and employers that we've brought in the last few years in Kansas City, the Cerners, Burns & McDonald's grown, but we need the small business community to keep growing and growing because they will eventually hire more people. And the thing I like about small business owners, and this is another great example, is they help spur other activity in the neighborhood.
Right.
But they're also more involved locally with community groups, and that's a really important thing for the city. Can I mention one thing on just to be clear to our Kansas City, Missouri taxpayers? For the Kansas City, Missouri funds, those are separate from the funds that are loaned out in Kansas and other jurisdictions. Okay. It's the same microlender, but we have that separate. And if you want, you can contact them directly. But our BizCare office in Kansas City, Missouri for residents and businesses in Kansas City, Missouri is our one-stop shop across from City Hall. The number to call is 513-2492, and they can put you in touch with the microlender. John Pager heads that office. They do a great job working with our small businesses. They do a lot of other things for small businesses.
513-2492. And just That's finally, correct. Scott, 5 years from now, how big is this fund going to be?
It's going to keep growing into the millions. We will make sure it's funded creatively. And as long as we have great entrepreneurial spirit and people like Gabrielle that are willing to take a chance, we want to support them in Kansas City, Missouri.
I want to thank Jim Boyle with Justine Peterson for taking some time. Jim, thanks very much.
My pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Gabby Bennett, owner of Bumps with Benefits in the 75th and Troost neighborhood. Good luck, Gabby.
Thank you
so much.
Wish you
all the best. Councilman Scott Taylor, thank you very much as well.
Thank you, Steve.
Time for a break. When we come back, we're going to talk bull riding and why these guys do what they do. I have no idea. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday, the media critics reviewed coverage of President Donald Trump and whether the journalism playbook should be rewritten for the new Trump administration. You can find those conversations at kcur.org/up-to-date. On Monday's show, the BBC will be with us to get your thoughts on whether politics should continue to divide our community post-election and how the president's executive orders are affecting us. Be sure to join us for that Monday on KCUR's Up-to-Date. Well, when does 8 seconds seem like an eternity? Maybe when you're trying to stay in the back of a 1,600-pound bucking bull. Why anyone would do that? Well, we'll just ask our next guest here this morning. Mason Lowe is from Exeter, Missouri, in the southwest part of the state. At 23, he's been in the pro bull riding circuit for 5 years. He's currently ranked 12th in the world by the Professional Bull Riders. That's the premier league in the sport. Mason, it's nice to have you. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Travis.
Brady Sims grew up in Holt, Missouri, about 30 miles north of here, but now resides in Texas. Also aged 23, he's been competing as a pro for 4 years, and he holds 19th place in the world rankings. Both Mason and Brady are in town this weekend for the PBR's Kansas City Invitational event. And Brady, welcome to you, too.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's get right to this, Mason. Why in the world do you do this?
Well, I've been doing it since I was 3 years old. My dad. And,
since you were three?
Yeah.
He put you on the back of a 1,600-pound bull?
Well, a little bit less, maybe about 100-pounder.
Some folks might think that's child abuse, just for the record.
Yeah. No, we used to have a bunch of dairy calves, and my dad and uncles used to ride bulls when they were younger, too. And one day, my dad snatched me up and threw me on the back of one and hit the ground and wanted to get back on one. So.
Oh, you wanted to get right back
yeah.
up? What did you like about it?
Right then, I really didn't know what the heck I was doing, so it was just kind of fun hitting the ground. I guess like some most kids, I like to fall in the dirt and roll around in dirt, and that's kind of what I was doing.
That's what you were doing. Brady, how about you? Why on earth do you do this? Because you're in one piece today. You may not be tomorrow.
Yeah, no, whenever I was younger, I was probably about five, and a buddy of mine that I grew up with, he just asked if I wanted to go to a mutton busting. I didn't know what it was, so I went with him and got on a sheep and fell off the back of him first little run out and got up crying and been with it ever since.
What did you like about it?
You know, it was just such an adrenaline rush for me, you know.
Really?
Especially whenever I was 5 years old and getting on a sheep. I mean, of course, I was crying whenever I was in the bucking chute and everything because I didn't know what was going on, but I just knew as soon as I did get off and get up and get my bearings back about me, I was like, this is pretty neat right here.
Well, Mason, you said you've been doing this for a long time. So today and this weekend, when you get on the back of one of these things, how is the adrenaline rush? How much adrenaline's rushing for you right now?
Usually, you don't really realize how much adrenaline's going until you really get off the back of the bull and you're back there and you're shaking and stuff like that. You don't realize that.
Are you shaking even now?
Yeah, you don't realize until you really get sitting down and kind of get your breath back to you, and then you really look at your hands and be shaking and stuff. But you really don't feel it as much as we've been doing it. We're kind of used to it by now. But at the first of it, you really get the butterflies in your stomach, and that even sometimes when you're getting on a bull that really bucks hard and kind of a scary looking one, you still get the butterflies.
Are some bulls more scary looking than other ones?
Oh, yeah. Some of them got big old horns. And even don't let the ones that don't have any horns fool you, because them's most of the time the scariest ones to get on.
Really? Can you tell by looking at them?
No, they all got different colors and different size horns. Horns go different ways and stuff. Some of them, you know, they're going to be made when they'll kind of hook the fence at you and stuff. And I mean, you kind of back up and you're like, dang, that bull might be a little mean. You might not want to get on him, but once you realize you got him, you still got to get on him.
Well, Brady, what strikes me about all this is just so how utterly unpredictable what you're doing is. I mean, you get on the back of one of these things, you don't know where he's going to buck and if you fall, where he's going to land. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of weight coming down on you. I mean, that's got to be kind of unnerving, isn't it?
No, I mean, not anymore. We've done it so many times. It's just like another day in the office, you know. I mean, you don't ever think about anything bad. You don't ever think about anything but riding your bull and getting the score that you're looking for. So it's kind of one of them things where somebody that doesn't do it all the time, it's hard for them to wrap their mind around it. But for us, since we've done it our whole lives and just we're so used to it right now that we don't even worry about anything else but just making it to 8 seconds.
So I gather that one of these things has landed on you at some point. You've had a hoof in the gut or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you get stepped on, rolled around, run over the whole nine yards. I mean, kicked.
What does that feel like, getting stepped on by one of these things?
You can just kind of imagine about a 1,600-pound weight just coming right down on you at about 70 miles an hour. I mean, you be the judge. It doesn't feel good. I don't care how strong you are, how tough you think you are. It still hurts no matter what.
Every time.
Every time.
Yeah, Mason?
Yeah, about every time. Sometimes you kind of anticipate it because you see it coming, and it don't make it feel any better when you see it coming either.
Even if you're bracing for it.
Even if you're bracing for it, it's still... We're about 150 pounds and 1,600 pounds. That's a little too much.
Well, Brady, you suffered a pretty serious injury fairly early on. You broke your neck.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah, and you're still doing that. Big deal or not?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was definitely a big deal. I was about 13, I think, whenever that did happen. And I broke my collarbone and my neck at the same time. And I didn't really understand, you know, the seriousness of it. I just knew that I wanted to get back on the bull, so... That's just kind of our mindset, though. You know, we don't let injuries and other stuff hold us back.
It didn't slow you down.
No. I just had to sit out for about 6 months, and then I was able to go right back to it.
Huh. Well, just to give our listeners a little more sense of scale here, I think Mason's already alluded to this a little bit. Brady's 5'9", 160. Mason, you're 5'11", 155. The average bull weighs between 1,600 and 1,800 pounds. Obviously, you're both very fit athletes, but I'm guessing you're not going to muscle your way through 8 seconds of riding these animals. So what's it come down to, Brady, to ride one of these things effectively?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it that no way mathematically, physically possible, you're gonna out-muscle them. So basically, like what everybody always says and how you learn how to ride the correct way is you're dancing with them. And it's 100% true. I mean, wherever they go, you let them lead and you follow what they're doing, you know. And it's if you try to out-muscle them, it's 9 times out of 10, it might work, but 9 times out of 10, you're not gonna get the full 8 seconds. So it's more of a dance instead of a fight.
But you don't know where they're going.
No, but I mean, you can feel where they're going because, like, whenever you squeeze with your legs and if you're looking where you're supposed to be looking, you can kind of read where they're about to move, what they're about to do, and get a feel for them.
You know, Mason, let's talk technique here. I mean, what can't you do during those 8 seconds, and what will get you disqualified here?
Well, PBR 101, bull riding 101, is you can't touch your bull with a free hand. We hold on with one hand and one hand in the air, and the one in the air, you can't touch the bull or your body.
So you can't use two hands to hang on.
Can't use two hands at all.
But that would be helpful, though, wouldn't it?
Not exactly. Sometimes, I mean, the way we ride our technique of ourselves, so I guess if we try to ride with two hands and we ain't never done it before, then we ain't going to be used to that, so it'll be a little harder to do that. But then on top of that, you got to ride 8 seconds. There's 50 points for how hard the bull bucks, how fast he spins, and all the kick and stuff he has, and then there's 50 points on our side of the ride, on our style, our form, how good we ride, if we spur.
Also, oh, so the bull's getting rated as well as the rider.
Yes, sir.
How aggressive the bull is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of every 100 times you get on a bull, how many of those times will you last 8 seconds?
Right now I'm batting about 31%. The bulls we get on are the toughest in the world, and they just keep getting better, and we're kind of staying the same. But... that's why we got to keep working hard at our technique to try to get our riding percentage and stuff up. But if you're riding 50%, you're going to be up there about that world champion race, in that world champion race.
So, Brady, Mason's at 31%. Are you about there too, or are you higher? Because you're ranked a little lower than Mason is right now, but not much.
Yes, I don't know exactly what mine was, but it's like 40-something, like 41 or 40.5% or something like that. But,
yeah,
you know, that's – it's kind of a deal where, like, at this point of the season, those kind of stats don't really mean as much as at the end of the year, because at this point in the year, we've been on a handful of bulls, but we've only probably been on 15, maybe 20 bulls, but by the end of the year, you're going to be on more like 120 bulls.
So it's early in the season.
This is early in the season, yes. So those stats and stuff like that, you definitely want to pay attention to them because you always want to have good riding percentage, but you really want to start paying attention to them later on in the season, you know, because if you've been on 120 bulls and you've rode five, well, that ain't going to be too good for you. But if you've been on 120 bulls and you've rode 55, well, your odds are going to be better to have that gold buckle at the end of the year.
Huh. And Brady, the aim here, if I understand correctly, is for you to keep your body centered on the bull's back. You want to stay towards the front. Do I have that right? And what can you do during a ride to keep yourself in the right position?
Yeah, I mean, there's basic mechanics of bull riding. I mean, for any bull, doesn't matter what they do, you have to go to the front whenever they rear up in the front. You have to go meet them, and then whenever they kick, all you're basically doing is just sitting down, and that's the only two moves that there is in bull riding. And
you actually try to stand up.
Yeah. I mean, basically, yeah, that's what you're doing on the back of him. Not obviously standing on him, but you're trying to push down and get everything back moving to where he's going. And that's basically the only two moves in bull riding. Then, I mean, you know, your left turn, your right turn, everybody's got a little different ideas on that. But the main goal out of all of it anyways, no matter what, is you got to stay in the middle.
Mason, do you ever, like, pat him a little bit to calm him down before you go out and ride? And does that help you any?
I don't think it gets me any brownie points, so I try to stay away from that. Some of them bulls, like I was saying earlier, some of them are mean, and some of them just stand there like a show calf. So, you know, they all get
different personalities.
They're
pretty still at first.
Yeah.
But then the gate opens up and they go nuts.
Yeah, wreak havoc.
Yeah. And they're wreaking havoc because it feels weird to them to have you on their back?
They're just wanting to kick us off, and we're just wanting to stay on. But a lot of them buck different. A lot of them buck a lot harder, and some of them are a little better at getting us off than the rest. But
Mason, do you have to train yourself to not follow the natural inclination to just lean back and avoid, as you describe it, riding at the end of my arm? And explain what that means and why that's bad form here.
That's just like going back to the bulls having the power. You ain't going to outmuscle them. When you get behind and they're going forward, they're going to yank you right to the ground, right on your head most of the time. There's a lot of training drills that you can do. Some people have barrels and some people do other stuff to try to get you to react, to go forward. And that's all a reaction. I've always thought in bull riding, if you're thinking about where you need to go, you're already a second too late, and then you're going to get piled on the ground. So you want it all to be a reaction. And then once you get on them barrels and stuff and you're just doing drills to get it in your head to keep going forward, then it's all going to come back to you.
I don't understand the barrel aspect. What are you talking about?
They have a barrel, and like it replicates the kick and the rear of the bull. So when there's one of them that's rearing forward, and you want to do all your, you just want to repeat going forward. That way, when you're actually on the bull, it's all a reaction instead of having to think about it.
So going forward is the key, as opposed to going backward.
Yeah, when you're up over them going forward, then it's going to take all the power away from them, and it makes it a lot easier on you.
Huh. Well, I'm talking with professional bull riders Mason Lowe and Brady Sims. You can see them this weekend at the Sprint Center as part of the PBR Kansas City Invitational. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Let's go to a call here from John from Kansas City, Missouri. John, good morning.
Morning. Hey, I just wanted to tell you guys, when I heard what the topic was going to be, I thought, really? Bull riding? And then this has turned out to be the most interesting show I've ever heard you guys put on, and I never expected such great explanations of the craft from and articulation from bull riders, for gosh sakes. Hey, thank you guys for putting on the show. It's really interesting. I've watched you guys a bunch of times and really never understood it, but I'm getting to it.
Hey, have you ever ridden one yourself, John?
No, I've fallen off. I had a horse when I was a kid, and the mares ran me into the fence, and I was under a bunch of hooves, so I kind of know what it's like.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. John, I'm glad you called. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Hey, take care, guys.
Thank you.
You know, Brady, different bulls have different styles of bucking, and I imagine you have to make adjustments for each. So let's run down a couple here. you've already alluded to this a little bit, but a spinning bull, rather than jumping high, he whips around in a tight circle and can really get some centrifugal force going there. Does it matter which way he spins and how you keep from getting pulled down in the well, which is, I guess, another bull riding term?
Yes. I mean, you know, there's bulls that, you know, some turn back real close to the gate whenever they come out. Some take a couple jumps out and kind of set you up really to duck out from underneath you. But basically, if a bull's just spinning one direction the entire time, that's relatively easy to ride because you just have to do the same move repetitively. Just make sure that you're doing it right the
and
whole time.
Once they start going one way, do they often stay going that one way?
Yeah. I'm not going to say 9 times out of 10, but we'll just say 75% of the time if they pick a direction, they're going to stay that direction. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and it's everybody's preference. Like, for me, I ride left-handed, and I'd rather bulls go left instead of going right.
And left-handed means you're holding on with your
yes,
left hand?
Yes, holding on with my left hand. So I'd rather bulls spin into that hand instead of going to the right and spinning away from that hand because the move for me is a whole lot easier to make that way. You can kind of somewhat be lazy about your technique whenever they're going into your hand. So, and then riders like Mason, he's right-handed, so I'm sure, and you know, he might like them going away from his hand, but most riders like a bull going into their hand.
If they're spinning left, then are you leaning left, or where are you going?
Well, I mean, you're kind of you're just letting him pull you around, basically. I mean, you're still got to work the entire time, but you're basically letting him do all the dirty work, and then you just catch up with him.
So when you're done with the ride, where does it hurt most?
It really doesn't truly hurt unless you already have something hurt. Or if you get stepped on. But, I mean, 9 times out of 10, if you're feeling good, then whenever you come off that bull, nothing really hurts.
Huh. And Mason, when you do fall, you always see the clown guy come out and help you out. Are there effective clowns and ineffective clowns in terms of luring that bull away?
The clowns we'll have this weekend, which we call bullfighters, they're the best of the best that's ever stepped foot in an arena. So, that makes us ride better, too, in that aspect, because we're not worried about a bull running us over when we get off or get bucked off. So we're just out there doing our job to stay on. The bullfighters, they'll get their attention quicker. Or if you get hung up in the rope because your hand turns over, and we got to have a wrap that goes around our hand, and it'll actually just, like, pry in there, and they have to really come in there. And the bullfighters, they'll jump right on their back with us pretty much, and take the tail of the rope and pull it out of our hand. That way we can get loose. And then there's three of them. So as soon as that one gets that tail done, then the other one's already taking the bull away from us. So we're safe and sound after that too.
So you're saying you can actually get caught on top of the bull because you're tethered to the bull by the rope that's keeping you on the saddle.
Yeah, there's no saddle. It's just a rope, and you stick your hand in a handle. And okay. Somebody pulls it up tight, and you lay it across your hand, and you go around the back of your hand and put it right through your hand again. And then if we get off, like, we want to jump off into our riding hand, the one we're hanging on to, because that's the way it'll prize out. But if you go away from your hand and you're hanging, you're just hanging there, and that rope turns over, and it gets in there just like a wedge, and you can't get your hand out because your fingers are already turned over towards his back, so there ain't no way open your hand.
And so the clown will come help you with that.
And that's when he'll come in there and grab that tail and yank it out, and you'll pretty much just come off.
So that's a scary place to be.
Yeah, you don't want to be right there.
Because the hooves are flying. You're hanging on the side, and the hooves are flying all over the place.
Yeah, and then sometimes they're spinning, and then sometimes, like when you're saying the well, which is inside the spin, sometimes you'll be in there, and you can't keep your feet. And you want to stay on your feet the entire time, and you want to stay close to the bull as you can.
If you're falling off, you're talking about.
That's the safest place. Well, when you're hung up and you lose your feet, then bulls can step on you, stomp you in the chest or stomp you in the legs.
Oh,
and
man.
You just don't want any part of that.
Brady, a bull that changes direction in the middle of the ride, what's he trying to do there, and what's that feel like?
He's just basically trying to outsmart you. You know, if he feels that you're going to ride him if he keeps going that direction, he might just swap up and go the other direction just to try to throw you off. Or, you know, I mean, if you can still ride him through that, I mean, he done lost at his own game. But whenever you get used to a bull going one direction – and they do swap, if you're not exactly where you're supposed to be and doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing, you're probably not going to ride him. And that's like with me, it doesn't really bother me if they swap directions. But as long as I'm doing things right, it doesn't affect you. But if you're kind of cheating one way and then all of a sudden he goes the other way, you're probably not going to hang with him.
So if you're sitting up there and it's second number six, I mean, are you starting to get confident? Like you're thinking, I'm going to make this? And is that a mistake to get confident at that point?
Huge mistake.
Really?
I mean, never once think that you actually have them rode until you hear that buzzer.
Yeah, it's not over until it's over.
Yeah, it ain't over until it's over, because if you're 7.99, you still go home with a zero. So
Really? You
can't ever just sit there and get comfortable on them, because then next thing you know, they might try something that they haven't done the whole ride, and you'll be sitting there looking stupid.
So how long does 8 seconds feel, Mason, when you're up there? Because on one hand, it doesn't sound like it's that long of a time, but I can only imagine on top of one of those things, it's a different story.
Oh, yeah, it is. And just like when you're saying getting comfortable in the back of the bull, that makes it a little bit longer. And that's why, as bull riders, we try to ride 10 or 12 seconds to trick our mind into riding all the way through it, instead of thinking at that six-second mark. We want to be thinking at the 9 second, 10 second mark, just to make sure we're at the 8 second mark.
Yeah, I want to get to this notion of how the bulls are treated, because folks might wonder about this. You know, some people might conclude that the bulls are treated better than you guys are because they ride in trailers with air ride suspensions. So in a sense, what, they're chauffeured to events here, Brady? I mean, is that right?
Yeah, 110%. I mean, in my eyes, the animal athletes do get treated way better than the rider athletes do. And they get on their big trucks or their nice trailers that they have, you know, and have air ride suspension, have about, you know, probably 6 or 8 inches worth of shavings in there to make it cushioned for them. And, I mean, they just basically get trucked to a place and – they'll drive for 10 hours probably a day, you know, if they're going a long distance, 10 hours a day, get feed, get water, get set up. I mean, they do have the life. There's no doubt about it.
Bulls are allowed to travel a maximum of 10 hours a day, but after 10 hours, they've got to rest, right? I mean, how many hours will you put in on the road, and how much rest might you get before you ride?
There's some aspects that we'll drive all night. Just depends on how many people you got in the car, too. You can only drive so long until you start getting tired. But during the summer runs, we'll be gone every day of the week, riding every day of the week, and we'll have to go from one place to the next. And sometimes we'll drive 20, 26 hours just to get somewhere.
Bulls also receive chiropractic care and acupuncture as needed to keep them in top shape and feeling great. Do you guys get that?
Sometimes. Not all the time, because whenever you're talking about the animals, you know, the guy that's taking care of him, the owner, if he notices something's off, well, he's going to take care of that bull's needs before he's going to take care of his own needs.
Yeah.
So with us, we're pretty stubborn, and if our back hurts or anything like that, we're like, you know, we're cowboys. We don't need any help.
Well, boys, good luck this weekend. So good to have you here. Mason Lowe, Brady Sims, competing this weekend in the PBR's Kansas City Invitational. It's at the Sprint Center. For tickets, visit pbr.com. Appreciate having you both here. Good
luck.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
On Monday's show, the BBC will be here to listen to your perspectives on the new administration and what the president's executive orders mean to you. The great Bobby Watson composed our theme music. We had help this week from Linda Scherer, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Claire Tatakoro. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.